But I really do believe that if you are prudent about tracking the right data, tracking all of your expenses, and being on point and being very, very knowledgeable about how a business runs and operates, then you can compete with anybody, including the big corporate chains.
Welcome to the Savvy Dentist Podcast with Dr. Jesse Green, the show where great dentistry meets great business. Listen in each week as we bring you an inspiring person who will share their story, ideas, and business techniques to help you create a practice and a life you love. And now introducing your host, Dr. Jesse Green.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to the Savvy Dentist Podcast, the show where great dentistry meets great business. Dr. Jesse Green here, your host at the control panels as always, and today it is an absolute thrill and a pleasure to be having a conversation with Dr. Mark Costes. Many people will know Dr. Mark Costes because he has a podcast, the Dentalpreneur Podcast, which is listened to by thousands and thousands of people. But not only that, he is the founder of the Dental Success Institute, and his reputation extends far beyond his home country of the United States, all around the world. Mark is definitely a thought leader when it comes to the business of dentistry and practice management, and he's someone who I've been following now for a couple of years, listening to his podcast, reading his blogs, and generally just getting to know his thought processes on certain things. What I've really admired about Mark is he walks the walk. Everything he talks about is the stuff he actually does in his own business. He is tremendously successful in his own business, and he shares some of those secrets, some of those tips, some of those practical things that he does on a day-to-day basis in this conversation that we recorded today. It's a far-reaching, far-ranging conversation, and Mark is very generous with his knowledge. He's a really lovely man, very, very bright man, and it's no wonder that he's regarded as a thought leader in the dental marketplace today. So I hope you enjoy today's conversation with Mark Costes. As always, have pen and paper handy because Mark drops loads and loads of value bombs, and I know that you're going to want to listen intently and take notes so you can take action on the things that he shares in this conversation. So without any further ado, here's Dr. Mark Costes. Dr. Mark Costes, thank you so much for joining the Savvy Dentist Podcast today. It's an absolute pleasure and an honor to have you on the show. How are you today?
I'm doing great. Thank you so much, Dr. Jesse. This is great. I've been listening to your podcast a lot. You've had some great guests, and I'm honored to have been invited.
Look, it's, the pleasure is ours, and this is an interview I've been looking forward to recording for the longest period of time because I've been following your stuff now for several years, and every time I tune into your podcast or you know, one of your videos that I've seen, I always think, wow, that's some really good stuff there that Mark's sharing, and I'm really keen to see what we're going to unpack today. So I'm really looking forward to this. Mark, I wanted to just start the conversation by unpacking the word dentalpreneur because, you know, you run the Dentalpreneur Podcast, and I mentioned to you off air that I'd thought that that was such a great name that I wanted to register the domain name, but you'd already done it, and which is great. So hence we've changed to Savvy Dentist,
which is a great name as well.
Thank you, I appreciate that. But I wanted to just unpack what does dentalpreneur mean to you, and why is that important in today's world, do you think?
Yeah, great question. I think that, you know, any kind of profession, we spend so much time honing our technical skills, our clinical skills in our case, learning how to be physicians of the oral cavity, learning how to be great clinicians. There's barely enough time to get through in the brief period of time that we're in professional school to get out and have the basic skills necessary to treat people and not hurt them, really. There really isn't any time at all to develop the whole other side of our personality. Michael Gerber talks about three personalities, the manager, the entrepreneur, and the technician. So the other side of our personality outside of clinician as dentists has to be CEO/entrepreneur. It's a big part of what we're responsible for knowing once we get into business, you know? And I think that the dental part is the clinical part, and the entrepreneur part is really important. And I think a lot of people take for granted the development of the entrepreneur portion of their personality. And I think it's so important, especially nowadays in our competitive market. It's not as it used to be when people would beat a path to your door if you were the best in town. I think there's so many other important aspects to develop in order for people to, you know, patronize you and find you in the first place.
Yeah, look, I think that's really absolutely true. And I'm just curious to ask, Mark, you know, what sort of qualities do you see of an entrepreneur that are essential to dental practice? Do you think it's around innovation? Is it, you know, kind of learning how to build teams, all of the above? What sort of are the essential entrepreneurial skills that you think a dentist needs to be able to bring to their practice?
Yeah, it's great. I mean, I think leadership is probably the number one skill that's necessary, and that's the ability to have difficult conversations, to be able to assess your practice and face the cold, hard facts of the data that you're gathering. I think there's so much basic business knowledge that's lost amongst people that are professionals, you know, accountants, attorneys, physicians, dentists. I think a lot of us take our skills and really believe that development of the skills is the only important thing. The development of our clinical skills is the only important thing. So I do believe that the most important traits for the entrepreneur has to be leadership, the ability to motivate people, the ability to have difficult conversations and make difficult choices, having a very basic knowledge of business and the data that we have to gather and collect, basics about being a persuader and marketer, all important things.
Now, have you always been an entrepreneur, Mark? Is it something that you learned, or is it something that you had innately? I'm curious to understand a little bit about your backstory, because I've been going through all your old blogs and all the, I suppose, the back copies of, you know, videos and bits and pieces there. What's your journey been on your path? Has it always been one that's, you know, been destined to lead to entrepreneurialism, or is it something you came to later, or what's been that path for you?
Yeah, I think it's kind of in my blood. We have a big joke, a running joke in our family. My grandmother was the entrepreneur of the family. My mom's mom was the entrepreneur of the family, and she was the best entrepreneur. She owned so many different small businesses. She owned a water company in the Philippines, and she had a car rental company, and she had a catering company. The funniest one was that she was a little bit of a hard money lender, I guess a bit of a loan shark. And my mom always tells the story that she would lend money to people in the neighborhood, and my mom would have to go out and collect the money and the interest on the money. So my mom was the collector, and she said that she always hated that more than anything else. So I think, you know, that kind of ran in our blood. I've been an entrepreneur since before dental school, out of necessity. Took me it's fairly competitive in the United States, I know in Australia as well, to get into dental school. I was a collegiate athlete, and I was diagnosed with, you know, ADD. So I had attention problems, learning disability when I was growing up. So I had a very difficult time getting into dental school. It took me 21 attempts and 3 years to get a single acceptance into dental school. And during that time, after I graduated from my undergraduate program until I got into my dental program, that was a 3-year span of time, I had a very difficult time finding a corporate job. So I went out and I bought a catering truck franchise. And I don't know if you guys have those in Australia, but it's basically a truck that goes from construction site to fairs or wherever there happens to be people and there's no restaurant or no snack bar available. And I would pull up and honk my horn and flip open my doors, and I had a kitchen in the back, and we would cook, you know, Mexican food and burgers and fries and sell Cokes. And that was my first toe dip into entrepreneurship. And it taught me so much. At the same time, I was getting my MBA. While I was trying to get into dental school, I was getting my MBA at night, my executive MBA. So I was driving the food truck during the day and getting my executive MBA at night. And I learned a lot about management of employees and understanding how to read a P&L and a balance sheet, understanding how to attract new customers and manage employees. So that was, for me, entrepreneurship 101. And when I finally got into dental school, I knew from the beginning that I wanted to be a multiple practice owner. I wanted to focus on the entrepreneurial side of dentistry, as well as developing my clinical suite of skills.
So with that initial foray into business with the food van, and I think I heard one of your videos, I think you might have referred to it as a roach coach, which is something we use that term in Australia as well, with all the wonderful connotations that it has.
Exactly.
But I love that. But you know, clearly you would have had to manage staff, as you said. You would have had to manage stock, you had an inventory, you would have had to manage cash flow, as you said, understanding financial statements. Do you see that some of those skills now, as you own multiple practices, you know, can you try the success you've had now back to those early days? Has it been a straight line, or has it been, you know, one of those circuitous paths to success for you?
I think it's such a straight line. I mean, having to have that real world of experience of customers that are angry with you and staff that just walks away and doesn't give you any notice, and managing, you know, the fact that the vendors want to be paid whether or not you made a dollar that day. I think that was such a great foundational piece for me, such a great understanding of how the world of business works, the reality of how business works. And it's a cold, cruel world out there when you get out there and you're managing staff for the very first time. You're getting paid for your professional services for the first time. You realize that the bills need to be paid whether or not, you know, you get any new patients that month. I think it was a very straight line to the reality of what it's like to own a real business.
Yeah, absolutely. And equally, you know, you mentioned, you know, while you're, you know, trying to get into dental school, there's 21 attempts over 3 years. I mean, that's incredible resilience, incredible, you know, perseverance.
Well, thank you.
Well, it is. I think it's wonderful. And, you know, again, I'm just curious, is that your nature? Are you the sort of person that just, you know, doesn't give up and just keeps on going until you get what you want? Or was there a moment when you had that, you know, crisis of confidence, you thought, you know, do I really want to do this? And obviously, you know, you got through it, but I'm just wanting to understand the psychology that you went through during that period.
Yeah, it's a great question. And I have to thank my parents for the tenacity and the grit and the perseverance. You know, my dad, I'm a first generation American. My dad immigrated to the United States when he was in his early 30s, left his pregnant wife, my mom, and later sent for them after he had made enough money to pay for their airline ticket. But he was an electrical engineer, and he really, really had the immigrant edge, what we call the immigrant edge. He worked hard against all odds, and he persevered even though he didn't have to leave a really cushy professorship in the Philippines. So I think they passed that on to me. I was never the biggest kid, not the fastest kid, not the most athletically gifted kid, but I was always known as a scrapper on all of the athletic teams that I played on. I ended up playing college football, and I was just always the coach's favorite because I was very coachable, and I was the person that, even though I lacked, you know, God-given gifts, I made up for it with ultra hard work. And it's just become part of my identity. And when I got to the position where, you know, I had gotten 6 or 7 rejections, of course, you know, any human being would think it would be easier just to give up, especially when I got into my MBA program. Hey, why not just focus on business? I can create my own business somewhere else. But I had in my mind that dentistry was going to be a great avenue to flex my entrepreneurial muscle. So I kept at it. And I'm really glad that I did. If I would have gotten in at any other stage of the career, so much would have been different. I wouldn't have bought the business. I didn't meet my wife until the third year that I had attempted to get into dental school. We never would have met. It would have changed the entire course of my life if I didn't stay the course and continue to beat my head against the wall until I finally got in.
Yeah, well, I think that's fantastic because, you know, there's a saying that, you know, some people beat the head on the wall until the wall breaks, but others stop when they get a headache. And obviously you just kept beating away until the wall crumbled, and good on you. I'm really interested to ask, you know, going through dental school and then coming out and graduating and getting to that first practice, because you own multiple practices now, you're obviously working in the space of helping other dentists, you know, achieve their success as well. You're in the fortunate position, much like I am, where you get to speak to lots of people. What do you think are the common traits of those that make a successful enterprise as opposed to just being good clinicians?
Great insight to ask that question. I do think that you have to spend an equal amount of time developing your entrepreneurial skill set as you do developing your clinical skill set. It's funny because I host live events. I have 4 live events per year. And the people that show up to the live events where we focus on dentistry, and there's just a touch about clinical stuff, but we're focusing on the management of dental practices, it's such a different type of person. And they're the type of people, not necessarily that aren't focusing on the clinical stuff. They have taken the time to really develop this other side of the business ownership mentality. And those types of people are typically the ones that are thirsty for knowledge, the ones that are constantly looking for an edge. Any kind of tactic or strategy, they'll travel halfway around the world to attend an event to maybe pick up 1 or 2 small nuggets, you know, that could potentially improve their practices. Those are the types of people that I think end up being the most successful dentists and the most successful business owners, for sure.
Yeah, and just to come back to a comment that you made about your football, and I think this is probably true with some of the people I see, is there are some people who are just naturally gifted, either, you know, with their hands for dentistry clinical work, or others who just have a, you know, innate understanding of business. But there are others who don't have those God-given talents, but who work really hard, they're coachable, they learn, they're thirsty and hungry for everything that they can get their hands on, and they just take action on it as well. And so I'm really curious to understand the people who attend your summits and your conferences. I'm guessing they fall, you know, there'll be some who are innately talented, but I'm guessing the vast majority looking at the bell curve have a moderate amount of talent, but it's hard work and persistence and dedication.
Yeah, and those are the people that I get along with the most, right? I mean, it's funny, when I got to dental school, they always said, you gotta model the people that are more successful, right? You're a student of personal development. So, you know, that's kind of a mantra that you hear. Follow the people that are further along and are where you want to be, right? So I got to dental school, and so I found, you know, the people that seemed to have the easiest time getting the best grades, and I attempted to model them. The problem is that the people that did the best were the people that had, you know, photographic memories, and they just had gifted hand skills, and they didn't have to work that hard for their great results, right? And I did finally figure out that wasn't me. I didn't have a bunch of God-given talents. So I had to find a new group of people that were more like me, that were willing to do whatever it took to just keep up with the people that had the photographic memories and that had a really, really rich science background. And the dental school classes were just a piece of cake for them. We were doing our best just to keep up with them. But those were the people, by and large, that have gone further and have had more successful dental careers, I have found.
Yeah, and that's exactly been my experience as well. The people, you know, in my own case, I certainly didn't possess God-given talents, but the people I work with and the people like you and me, you know, tend to work harder than most, and I think it's that work ethic that really carries people through. What I wanted to just check in around, though, as well is, you know, obviously over the period that you've been practicing, like the period I've been practicing, the dental landscape has changed dramatically. And one of the, I believe, one of the fundamental elements or attributes of being an entrepreneur is the ability to be agile, to react to changes and change course if you need to. So where do you see the things changing at the moment? What are the trends happening in America? I mentioned to you earlier that, you know, when America sneezes, Australia catches a cold. So I'm curious to understand what sort of changes are happening in the States now that we might expect to see here in Australia shortly.
Yeah, that's a great question. When I graduated, the first 7 years of my dental career, I managed to accumulate 6 dental practices. And I was working very, very hard, 80 hours plus a week. I was working full time as a dentist, but I was also traveling from practice to practice to practice, putting out fires. And I didn't have a bunch of systems, not predictable systems in place like I do now. I didn't have a great executive team in place. So for me, it was a very, very stressful period of my life, even though all of the practices were doing really well and they were increasing in value year after year. The production collections, the revenue was going up in each practice every year. So I reached a point after a 7-year mark that I decided I'm just going to sell 4 of these practices. And I kept my 2 practices. And it was during that time when I really had time to just slow down and reflect about what made my life just too crazy to sustain it at the level that I had, you know, built it up to. That's when I created the Dental Success Institute, my consultancy, and that's when I developed the Horizon Schools of Dental Assisting. And during that time, I realized the importance of being able to delegate, the importance of systemization, the importance of having a good, strong executive team that could do most of the heavy lifting for me, and I could just check in with them every once in a while. So since that time, we went back up from 2 to 10 practices. We've acquired another 8 practices this year. And like you said, the landscape has changed significantly. And what's happening is that it's getting more and more difficult for the single practice doctor to compete against the corporate chains. And I guess you can call me a small corporate chain now because I have 10 dental practices, but I represent over 80 dentists that are my personal clients. So now we are getting approached by suppliers and vendors and labs, and they all want a piece of our, you know, 90 plus practices, and they want to treat us like this, a big corporate group. And we can clearly see the benefits of being affiliated with a large corporate group. You get huge discounts as far as labs and supplies and heavy equipment, all the equipment that goes into a dental practice. You have a lot of leverage with services like attorneys and people that can negotiate for your rents in your commercial buildings. There's a lot of benefits to being associated with a larger group. So the biggest change that I see in the landscape nowadays is that it's getting harder and harder for a single practice doc that stands alone to get the leverage to negotiate and to experience some of the benefits of the larger groups get. So that's the biggest change. But I really do believe that if you are prudent about tracking the right data, tracking all of your expenses, and being on point and being very, very knowledgeable about how a business runs and operates, then you can compete with anybody, including the big corporate chains. Because what you offer out there, you one and two doctor small groups and single offices, what you offer that the corporate chains don't get is, you know, the ability to really deliver a great patient experience, something that's not overly canned and systemized to the point where it feels cold and too deliberate. So, you know, those are the types of things that the single doctors can do to stand out. And you can actually use that in your favor over the bigger corporate, you know, companies.
So I guess what I'm hearing you say then, Mark, is if there are practice owners who own one or two practices, or just, you know, one or two dentists in one practice, the best way for them to compete really is at that human level, where you're creating a wonderful patient experience. It's very humanistic. It's not canned. It's not a McDonald's systemized to the nth degree, where you kind of get the arms and legs of your staff, but not the hearts and minds. And so that way they're delivering something a little more personalized, a little more boutique. Is that essentially what you're saying?
It's so true. Yes, that's one part of it, Jesse. But the other part would be really having a solid business knowledge and a really, really strong understanding of what's happening behind the scenes. Your overhead, your cash flow, developing your leadership potential, all of that stuff. You have to understand how overhead works. You have to understand how to appropriately pay people according to, you know, standard guidelines. And if you don't understand that, then you're going to get gobbled up nowadays. And I guess what you alluded to this earlier, but what's really changed is that dentistry is forgiving in the fact that we make a lot of money for what we do, and we have high value procedures that are compensated well. And a lot of people have been able to run sloppy businesses in the past because of that compensation, but that's going away. Now we have to pay much better attention to cash flows and competition and, you know, new patient flow and those sorts of things, much more than we had to in the past.
Yeah, absolutely, Mark. The analogy I use is, in years gone by, we could wallpaper over the cracks, but we can't anymore. Those cracks are going to show up. And yeah, well, because in the past there was, you know, the supply-demand equation was tipped very much in favor of an undersupply of dentists, at least here in Australia. And it just meant that, as you said earlier, there were people beating a path to your door, and that's just not the way it is anymore. So I love what you're saying. You've got to run a proper business. You've got to kind of get schooled up, get knowledgeable about, you know, the back-end operations, cash flow management, team management, wages, all those sorts of things, as well as the patient experience. And that's going to set you a foundation that you can compete with.
Absolutely.
Mark, you know, you hang around the dental space a lot, I know, and you probably speak to lots of different people. I'm curious, this is probably a question you may not hear that often, but what do you see as the worst advice being given to dentists these days?
This is funny, and I don't know if it's as applicable to you in Australia as it is here in the United States, but a big push for a lot of dental consultants and dental experts is that if you charge if you become a fee-for-service practice, which means in your case you don't accept any dental funds, in our case you don't accept any dental insurances, and if you really stand head and shoulders above your competition that is accepting dental insurances, you can stand above and people would be willing to pay more. So a lot of people nowadays are saying, even still, are saying, drop all the insurances, just really focus on that patient experience, and that alone will get the patients to stay. And you might not expect this, but even with all of the efforts and all, I mean, you could do whatever that you could possibly think of for a patient experience. And if that is all you are relying on and you're dropping all insurances and you're not accepting any outside third payer payees, you're going to lose a significant amount of your patient base. And I've seen it happen over and over again with really, really great practices. Now, of course, there's exceptions. There's a couple percentages out there, maybe 3 to 5% that are able to do that here in the United States. But it's that those numbers are dwindling, and we're seeing more and more that the patient population is very, very price conscious. And so my counter to that is, you know, you can accept a few plans that discount your fees a little bit, but you just have to be even more prudent about calculating your cash flow and overhead and expenses. I mean, we know our expenses to the gauze. We know how much it costs for a cotton roll. We know how much it costs for 6 inches of floss. And with that, armed with that kind of sophisticated knowledge about our expenses, we're able to calculate and make really good decisions based on which types of insurances we can accept, which ones will be profitable and which ones aren't. So I hope I'm not going down a rabbit hole that doesn't apply to the Australian market, but I guess the bad advice would be to close your mind about any different type of fund or insurance, and in return, maybe be more sophisticated about tracking your expenses so that you can make informed decisions.
That rabbit hole is directly applicable to the Australian market, actually, Mark, because in Australia, we refer to it as preferred provider programs, and the insurance companies run them. And certainly, you know, we're experiencing markets becoming more price conscious as well. And while we're probably a little bit behind the American market in terms of the effect of that, certainly my observation is that, you know, in 10 years ago, people were spending, you know, a lot more money on dentistry. You know, times were more economically buoyant. People were more confident. But it seems, you know, I don't really know what's happening in America, but in Australia, even though our economy is going along okay, it doesn't feel that the confidence has fully returned back to those pre-GFC days, that's for sure. And I suspect that's a huge factor in people becoming a little more discerning about how they spend their money.
Absolutely. It's so true. And I feel it too. I mean, I hear the same thing from my clients that are from New Zealand and Australia. They echo that sentiment. And I will say this, I hear often that people say in Australia and in the United States, you know, I don't see how people can be profitable accepting those fees. But really, do you really know if you can't be profitable accepting any fee? Like, I don't want to hear that unless you know exactly what your costs are, right? I mean, not only do you know what your lab fee percentage is, what's your dental supply percentage, what you're paying on legal and accounting, what you're paying for office expenses, but even more sophisticated, what per procedure are you paying? How much is exactly does it cost you per hour for your surgery time? How much exactly does it cost for your overhead as far as your utilities for each operatory, for each surgery per hour? Like, if you get that specific, then you can make the real informed decisions. And then you can justifiably say, I can't be profitable with this plan. But until you get that sophisticated, you can't really say that.
Look, I couldn't agree more. Knowing your numbers is critical. Knowing your numbers is what allows you to make decisions, and it's a lens to look into your practice and, you know, look under the hood of the car so you can see what's happening with the engine. And you're quite right. You don't know whether you're going to be able to make these decisions without that data. So I think you're right. Get the data and then make the decision. Mark, if you were a new dentist, going back, you know, if you could rewind time and you were just exiting dental school, and given that you'd had some entrepreneurial background with the Roach Coach business, if you were the average new graduate today and you were coming out of dental school into this competitive environment, what would be the advice you'd be giving to a new graduate? I know part of that advice will be, you know, train yourself up and get some business skills and dedicate some time to that. But going beyond that, what would be your advice to someone entering the profession today, or even the next step, just entering their first practice?
I love this question. So let's think about, once again, my analogy about the two sides of your personality. So once again, Michael Gerber from the E-Myth says there's three sides to the entrepreneur's personality, and that should be the technician, which is the clinician in our case, and then the manager, and then the entrepreneur. In our case, I like to simplify it. You're basically an entrepreneur / CEO, and you're a clinician. So as a brand new grad, very, very important to get the basics of business. And I've said that over and over again. I'm a broken record. But there's some really cheap and easy resources that you can surround yourself with, that you can expose yourself to. One of them is podcasts just like yours, The Savvy Dentist. Great free content. Listen to those sorts of things. The Dentalpreneur podcast, my podcast. There's 40 plus dental podcasts out there right now. All free content from anything from very, very specific clinical stuff to general business. There's all kinds of free content out there. So I would say immerse yourself in the free content out there. There's several books that I would suggest that you read. The first one is The E-Myth by Michael Gerber. I've mentioned it several times. The next one is The Four Disciplines of Execution by Sean Covey. Another one is Extreme Ownership by Jocko Willink. Those are three books that if you read those books or listen to them on audio, it will put you miles ahead of your competition. So that's the business side of stuff, okay? Really concentrate on immersing yourself with some free content. Read the right books. And then from the clinical side, I really think that you need to focus on developing what I would call a skill stack, right? You need a very good skill stack. So you will never go hungry in dentistry if you know how to do certain things. If you know how to do extractions very, very well, surgical extractions very well, if you know how to do molar root canals very, very well, if you can do some sort of sedative procedure, whether that's oral conscious sedation or, you know, IV sedation, and if you can do some surgical stuff like placing implants. And then there's other things like adult ortho, et cetera. But if you can extract teeth, if you can place implants, if you could do molar, endo, and if you could sedate people, you will never go hungry. And it doesn't mean that you have to do all of this stuff at once. You can build this clinical stack, this skill stack very slowly. But if by mid-career, say a decade into your career, you could do all of the things that I just mentioned, not only will you be able to potentially own your market, you'll be able to retire much earlier. And if you're so inclined, you'll be able to accumulate enough money where you can maybe go into multiple practice ownership like so many of my clients are able to do.
Yeah, I think that's fantastic advice. So for anyone listening, I hope you've had your pen and paper handy there, because that was just absolute gold from Mark there. That's how to get ahead in two easy steps, but don't be deceived by simple not necessarily being easy. So Mark, that's fantastic advice. Now, if you had been in practice now for, say, 3 or 4 years, you own your own practice, that is, and things aren't going exactly to plan, things might have plateaued a little bit, what do you think would be the little kickstart that would be required just to get things moving along? And I know this is a broad question and there's 101 different possible scenarios that we could describe, but just generally, what would be something to think about there?
Yeah, I would find somebody like you, Jesse. I would find somebody like you, a coach. This is probably an overused analogy, but all the greatest athletes in the world all have a coach. No matter how good, you could be the best athlete in the world. You could be the best in the world at anything. Billionaires out there have business advisors and business coaches. The best athletes in the world all have coaches. But there's no reason why you should feel as though, since you've been out 3 or 5 years and you're flat, that you could figure this out on your own, because you can be very myopic about the way you envision your practice because you don't have that objective look outside of things. So if you can get an objective look, if you can find a mentor, if you can find a coach that can kind of take an objective look and say, you're doing these things great, but here are some things that I think that would benefit you to work on, I think that's probably the fastest and most efficient way to get a jump start and to get your practice moving in the right direction again.
Okay, cool. Mark, I really appreciate you taking the time today. You've been really generous with your time, and I do want to pick your brains just one last time before we let you get on with your afternoon, because it is afternoon in the United States. Given that the title of your podcast is Dentalpreneur and you've got True Dental Success as well, I wanted to ask you about entrepreneurs. If you're having a dinner party, this is the scenario. If you're having a dinner party and you could invite a handful of entrepreneurs around, who are the people that you look up to as great entrepreneurs that you'd invite around for dinner party? Because I'm always fascinated to understand who that would be for different people.
A lot of that has to do with the books that I read, right? So I would love to meet Michael Gerber in person. He's in his 80s now. He's the author of E-Myth, which I consider to be my business Bible, the greatest business book ever written. One of my good friends, Michael O'Neill, who has the Solopreneur podcast, had the privilege of interviewing him on his podcast. So I would definitely want to hang out with him. I would want to hang out with Jocko Willink, another author of, I call it my Fantastic Four, of Extreme Ownership. I would want to hang out with him. I would want to hang out with one of the Rockefellers. You know, I would want to hang out with somebody from that family that before they had anybody to really model themselves after, really created this generational wealth that we all still hear about. And, you know, for better or for worse, I would probably want to hang out with Donald Trump, not because I agree with his policy, but what he's been able to do to move from the financial world to the world of entertainment to now the leader of the free world. Hey, believe me, there's a lot of things that he says and does that I don't agree with, but I think he's a fascinating character, and his ability to persuade people, at least 51% of our country, is fascinating. And I would love to just sit down and pick his brain and really just have a conversation with him.
I can imagine the conversations with Jocko Willink and Donald Trump. Can you imagine that? That would could you imagine that?
Oh my gosh. They're both very, very intense people. But yeah, that would be, I would love to be a fly on the wall to hear that conversation.
That would be awesome. Hey, Mark, I really, as I said earlier, I really do appreciate you taking the time to come and hang with us today. You are a very generous guy, extraordinarily successful in your own right. You know, the work you're doing for the dental profession and the community more broadly is wonderful. So highly regarded. It's no wonder that you're known worldwide as being, you know, someone who really walks the walk and does wonderful things. So I really appreciate you taking the time to come and talk to us today.
Hey, thank you so much, Jesse. And I'm gonna extend an invitation right now in front of all of your listeners to hopefully we can get you on my podcast and introduce you to my audience. I'm so thrilled and honored to have been asked to be on this podcast. So thank you very much.
Oh, the pleasure's been all ours. Thank you, Mark. Wasn't that a great conversation with Dr. Mark Costes? So much wisdom, so much experience that he shared in that conversation. And as I mentioned in the introduction, I really hope you managed to take some good notes. If you haven't, I'd really encourage you to go back and listen to the episode again, because what he shares in that conversation is just gold. And so if you haven't had the opportunity to get notes, I'd encourage you to do so. And most importantly, take action on those notes. Now, if you want to find out more about Mark and his material, by all means, check out his website, which is truedentalsuccess.com, and you can find out more about him there. He's got a blog, he's got some, you know, different products there. But equally, I'd suggest you subscribe to his podcast, the Dentalpreneur Podcast. It's a wonderful show, and I recommend it highly. So until next week, take good care, and we'll see you on the flip side.
Thank you for listening to the Savvy Dentist Podcast. For more episodes, go to drjessegreen.com/savvydentist. And to discover how to build a high-performance dental practice, visit drjessegreen.com and download the free report.